The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 372 or 3. I'm not really even sure. To be broadcast November 22nd, 2023 on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. Fran decided to go to work. Fran works all the time. The only reason she decided to do this is because it is actually the Thanksgiving week, and so she was feeling like she needed to take a little bit of time off before the holiday or around the holiday, because a lot of people don't like to go to the doctor just before Thanksgiving. Plus, they're not even in town, so that's what that's all about. Anyway, Franny's off at work, and anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute, because I do have a positive side to mention there. But let's get right into this and talk about this a little bit more. Ron's rant of the week. Be aware of your space and surroundings. Hey, bicycle shops, this might be a part of your departing words as you send people out on their new bikes. Yeah, I got a comment from a listener about the fact that someone on their new bikes, apparently real close to the rail trail, had just inadvertently cut him off while he was riding his bike because they didn't even look to see if anybody was coming. You know, you wonder why people get caught and or get hit by cars or whatever. And you, just because you're on a bicycle doesn't mean you don't need to pay attention. So that's my rant of the week on that one. And I've got more. I got more rants this week. New York City Mayor Adams and his office concur the proliferation of e-bikes is driving a surge of cyclist deaths this year, City Hall claimed on Tuesday. Really? If so, why aren't there safer places to ride? Don't complain about the fact that you have more deaths on e-bikes. Complain about the fact you don't have safe places for them to ride. That's it. I ranted. I did it. But I'm not done yet. No, no, no. I got one more for you. One more. All you GNC Plus members, we're going to talk about that a little bit more in the show. And if you don't know what's going on there, you're going to find out today. On a positive side, it seems the more I talk about e-bikes, the more listeners I get back to me with their incredible positive stories and reviews. The revolution has begun. And, of course, a big DUH goes out to this survey. You ready? Hang on tight here, folks. Academics conclude what we already know. Cyclists are more neighborly than drivers. Duh, of course they are. Cyclists are better people than drivers, not only because they get exercise or help the environment, but they also have better ethics, a new study suggests. But of course, this and more in the show. And Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. All right, so this spurred off of the person who almost got taken out by the two people on bicycles. It's funny that John said they were old people on bicycles, and I find that rather humorous because John is also over 70. I'll just leave it at that. But anyway, just a little bit of a shout out there, and I'm rapidly approaching it. So I guess I'm kind of an old person on a bicycle. Never really thought about that, but I guess I am kind of an old person on a bike. So this is it. How to look behind you and not weave all over the road. Pretty simple, it seems, doesn't it? Look back technique. That's what we're going to talk about here today in our cycling tips. Turn your head in the direction you want to look. Move your eyes as far as you can to the direction you want to look. Make sure you continue riding straight by dropping the opposite side of your body, your elbow, shoulder, hip, really anything, and or pushing your handlebars to the opposite side. It seems pretty self-explanatory, doesn't it? Yeah. But you know what? There's people that just don't know how to look behind them as they're riding down the road. I'm going to throw another little tip in here too, and this is a big one, and of course I've beaten this dead horse so many times that, that it may come back to life again. You never know. So what about the idea of maybe just breakdown. I know you lycra-clad guys out there and gals out there who just refuse to do anything that is too geeky on your bike, but consider a mirror. I use a 45 millimeter mirror. It's small. It sticks in the end of my handlebars. And it's just so easy to look at. It really isn't a difficult thing. And when you get used to it, you'll find that you'll find yourself glancing at it all the time. And if you happen to hop on one of your bikes that doesn't have the mirror on it, you'll find yourself still looking at it all the time because you're looking for the mirror. It's a great addition to your bike. And yeah, I was that lycra-clad guy who was not in any way ever going to put a mirror on my bicycle. I don't want to have that, you know, mirror on my fancy little racing bike and, you know, have it look like I'm some sort of a tourist or whatever. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I was that guy. I was that guy. But I'm not that guy anymore. Now I'm that guy who actually finds, I've become quite dependent upon my mirror. I think it's really, really nice. I like it a lot. So anyway, yeah, think about that. Just think about that and see what you think. I think they're good. So let's go back to how to look behind you on the bike. We went over some basics on this just to, you know, when to look back, when you want to switch lanes or move over to avoid some kind of obstacle, checking for other bicycles that may overtake you, checking the right hook. Sometimes when you reach an intersection or driveway, you might think the car may want to turn right soon and you're in between and you want to see how close they are. And if they see you, well, my explanation on that is if you are in that position where there is a car coming up on you quickly and there is a possibility they may turn right into you, get out in the lane. Don't ride your bike, drive your bike. Driving your bike is a much more responsible way to play in traffic than to ride your bike in traffic. Riding your bike in traffic tends to be just doesn't work as well as it could work if you were, you just got to figure out new ways to pay attention out there. That's all. That's all. Very simple. So let's take a look at some of the other things that you can do on your bike. Of course, you can do what I have been promoting and pushing so hard, and that is a camera or radar app on your bike that will help you know when cars are coming up from behind you, and then, you know, you can just glance down the mirror and you can see behind you. Hopefully you don't turn your whole body. Here's the whole problem here. What people do, and I see this so many times, especially inexperienced cyclists, people are just getting into this. If you're one of those and you're listening to the show, big shout out to you for finding Bicycle Talk. That's a cool thing. But anyway, you might want to understand that when you turn around to look, if you use your shoulders or your upper body to make that look, to actually look back, you are going to turn the handlebars of the bike. When you turn the handlebars of the bike, you then weave the bike, you then tell whatever or whoever is coming up from behind you that you don't know what you're doing, that you're going to weave in front of them, and they're going to be very, very cautious. You wonder why cars are so hesitant around bicycles? It's because they don't ride a straight line. And there's just a real there's a real skill to being able to ride a straight line when you're riding your bike down the road. It doesn't really take that much practice, but it does take some practice. And it's all about turning around and looking back technique. And the technique is very, very simple. You just have to use your eyes and your neck and make the turn. Now, as I have become that old cyclist that I was talking about earlier, I've become a little less flexible than I used to be. So therefore, turning and looking is a lot more difficult to me than it used to be. you know, I don't have the same flexibility I used to have years ago. My neck's a lot tighter. My shoulders are tighter, all because of the fact that's all my own personal bad behavior and not taking care of my flexibility over the years. And I will own up to that one. I've just started doing a little bit more yoga, and boy, I'm finding that the results are really, really good because I am increasing some flexibility. And even when I'm out on my bike on the road, I find it's a lot easier for me to look back, to make that turn and look back. When I look back, I kind of look under my arm also as I'm looking back. And again, you're dropping your shoulder on the opposite side of where you're looking. So that's how you kind of do it. So you only need to really look back for a split second, and then you can turn your attention forward again. It really doesn't take that much. Now, again, it's a skill, and it's a skill that should be practiced. If you plan on going out and being on the road and being safe on the road, you need to explain. Yeah, this is kind of a funny thing to do, but explain to the motorized vehicles that you're riding with that you know what you're doing. And when you start riding responsible like that, when you start riding that razor straight line, that laser, I'll call it, straight line, and you're going down the road and you're not weaving back and forth, the driver behind you considers you far more predictable than they would someone who is weaving back and forth. And, you know, I I got called out by a local resident. I've been called out by a couple of local residents over the last couple of years because I am identifiable by the fact that I usually have my hair tied back and in a ponytail, and there is another rider of a bicycle around town that has a similar ponytail hanging out of the back of his helmet, and he's all over the road. He's completely irresponsible. He does not pay attention to traffic. He weaves everywhere, and unfortunately, I've had a few people identify him as me. I'm not that guy. I'm not that guy. I won't do that. I like my life a lot, and I plan on living for a long time, and I plan on not being hit by any motorized vehicles if I can help it. And so far, so good. I have been riding my bike for quite some time now, being that I am now 68 years of age, and started riding my bike when I was in the single digits, and I have not yet to this day really been hit by a car. So knocking on wood, as I have this nice big solid maple desk here in front of me. Yeah, you gotta. The reason I am going to say is I got two reasons for it. A, I live in the eastern part of a state that has not a huge population, but most of the population is not on this side of the state. So I have a luxury of being able to ride on backcountry roads, which are quiet and generally don't have as much traffic. So that's one way to preserve your riding and not being hit. Number two, I have a rule, which I've had for years. And it's a rule that has won me friends and lost me friends, but I won't ride on state roads unless I absolutely positively have to. Or as long as they are like super, super quiet, which we do have a few of those out here in eastern Connecticut. But when you get on that wide, fast state road with the big wide shoulder that everybody looks at as being safer because you've got this big shoulder, you are just taking your life in your hands. And I'll explain it to you super, super easy here, okay? 1 mile of a stretch of a giant wide road with a huge shoulder versus 1 mile of a back road equals 100 cars passing you or one car passing you in that 1 mile. It's just a numbers game. That's all it is. It's just a numbers game. The more you expose yourself to the higher numbers, the more risk you're taking when you're out there riding your bike. So why take the risk? Go out and ride on roads that are quiet and just don't have a lot of traffic, and your risk level drops dramatically from what it's going to be if you're riding on a busy road with a wide shoulder. just don't like those wide shoulders a whole lot. People drive with their knees. They drive with their cell phones in their hands. I just don't like it. So anyway, roads with names, not numbers. One of Pedal and Rod's number one rules. So always keep your peripheral vision. You move your eyes all the way to the edge of your vision and turn your head just a little bit less than 90 degrees. You can pretty much see fully behind you. So you just got to keep practicing. And practice does make perfect here. You just have to kind of get used to the fact that you're going to be turning and not turning your handlebars. You can even do this taking one hand off the handlebar, but that requires even more practice, because as you do that, so you're looking to your left, you keep your right hand on the handlebar, and then you turn back and you lift your other arm off, your right arm off of the I've got that backwards. Your right hand is on the bars and your left hand comes off, and you can turn your body a little bit more because your hand's not connected to the handlebar. But again, you have to be very skilled at being able to support yourself and not turn that other arm when you make the turn. So best to keep both hands on the bars at all times, but if you get good at it, you don't normally have to. So it certainly is a good way to do this too. And again, practice. Practice it in a parking lot. Practice it on a back road when no one else is around. Practice making that turn from your torso, okay, but not turning it so much that it affects your shoulders. So it's a technique. And you can practice it with a friend. That's a great way to do it. Great time to do it is in when you're practicing and you're being very, very verbal with your friend, is to do it on like a rail trail where there is no traffic, and then just practice making those moves around. It's another time that you can also practice reaching out and putting your hand on your friend and then taking your hand off. So your hand comes off the handlebar, it goes over, maybe put your hand on their shoulder and ride alongside of them for a few pedal strokes, and then put your hand back over. Those are really, really good techniques. They're really, really good things to learn, and it just requires practice. It's a beautiful thing, isn't it? Very much so. All right, so what else have we got here? Let's get into a little more content here. Let's see, did I pull this back up? Let's hopefully I did. I was a promise from last week. I had started talking about Cranksgiving, and I don't think I loaded it back up today. Look at that. Isn't that great? Good thing I have it here. So we're going to talk a little bit about Cranksgiving. Cranksgiving is it's the 24th annual Cranksgiving bicycle event. It's an inspired food drive, and it's underway nationwide, and first time is attracting additional industry sponsors with more than 100 events this year after a full turn from, or a lull from, the COVID-19 pandemic, or otherwise known as the before years. Someone mentioned that one day. I was watching something. You talked about the before years and the after years, because it's before COVID, after COVID. BCAC, I guess we'll call that. And everything kind of took a hit on that. A lot of cycling events took a hit on that for sure. And they're all starting to build back up. But a little sip of coffee there. It's been a dream for the organizers now to get this to build, because it's just a great way to raise money and raise food for people that are in need. And, you know, what better way to do it than on your bicycle? It's a great thing. I got so much interest in this that I am now contemplating putting something together for next year. But this is a minor commitment on the air, because I know you guys will hold me to this. But I would love to be able to coordinate it with, there's an annual event here that happens every year on Thanksgiving that draws a huge amount of people, and it's called the Manchester Road Race, which I will be running in this year at, well, scratch that. I will be participating in this year because my running days have slowed way down, and I just really go there because this will be my 38th year of doing it. So shout out to the Manchester Road Race. Shout out to, the organizers there. What an amazing event that is. I've been in it as much as when they've had as many as 15,000 runners in this race, and it's less than 5 miles. So the logistics are intense as to getting everyone out before the winners come back in. And that's kind of an interesting thing. But I would love to coordinate this because they do close all the roads off for like an hour before the event goes off. What a great time to run a Cranksgiving event too. Just an idea. Anybody who's involved in the Manchester Road Race, if you think this is a good idea, reach out to me because I think this thing might have some legs here. The roads are already closed, so it'd be kind of a fun thing. We don't have to use the entire course. We can just use part of it and just do a short bike ride and, do a good thing. I think it's good. So anyway, hey, Don, yeah, I will see you there as a runner also, apparently. I'm assuming that you are running and not spectating, so that's good. That's a good thing. This is a thing where there is actually a Cranksgiving website, and you can go there, and let's see if I can pull that up just to see exactly what it is and where it is. And it is cranksgiving.org. It's a food drive on two wheels. It's a part of a bike ride, part of food drive, and part of scavenger hunt. And all you need is a bike, a bag, and a lock. And that's it. So pretty, pretty simple. 112 cities in 2019. It's a very grassroots organized event. They're not always, they generally run between September through December. And according to this one on their site, it says over 1 million meals were delivered from Cranksgiving. So food insecurity affects 1 in 9 households each holiday season. All proceeds from Cranksgiving go to support local food banks and shelters. So that's a good thing. And you can join the movement. And if you go to the Cranksgiving website, then they have a click and they'll show you how easy it is, and they'll show you how you can put this thing together. It's a great thing. It benefits local charities and cities around the world. Each event is locally organized. For more information, closest to you, contact your host organizer. And once again, you go there and you type in your zip code and you'll find that there are Cranksgiving events around. So anyway, that's what Cranksgiving is all about. And I think it's a great thing because it just makes a lot of sense. And it's just another positive thing that we can do as cyclists out there that will draw positive attention to us instead of negative attention because, you're all over the road, you're this, you're that. I've heard it all. I've heard every argument that anyone has ever laid out, and quite honestly, I'm very tired of it. It's like, give it up, get yourself a bike, go out for a ride, and see the world from a different position than behind the glass of an automobile. That's it. So anyway, Cranksgiving. Yeah. All right. Good thing. Totally good thing. Back to our list of things to discuss today. And that will be, where did I put it? It's here somewhere. Okay, here we go. And from the rant, let's go back to the rant. Okay, City Hall uses flimsy data to blame e-bikes for the rise in cycling deaths. The proliferation of e-bikes is driving a surge in cyclist deaths each year, City Hall has exclaimed. This comes from Streets blog, and it is not that one right there. Hang on here just a second. Again, we keep losing things here. Here we go. City Hall. Okay. So I look at things like this and I kind of laugh because it's not funny. It's not funny. It's just odd that they would point towards the reason why there's a rising death toll of cyclists is because of e-bikes. Uh-uh. Not true. Not true. The reason there is a rising death rate of cyclists, whether they be e-bicyclists or regular bicyclists, is because of cars and trucks, okay? And yes, that bike may be in a place where it is not as easy to ride or drive, and there may be some question of the bicycle being out there and congesting the roadways, but let's go to Copenhagen. How come 70% of the people that travel in Copenhagen travel by bicycles and they don't have anywhere near these statistics? Enough said. Not going there. Yeah, I should go there. I'll talk about that in future episodes. The cities that do it right don't have the same problem. So it really needs to be looked at from an entirely different direction, not a shame and blame direction. And shame and blame is a common way for big cities and urban atmospheres to try to rid the roads of pedestrians and cyclists. And guess what? We're not going away. We're actually getting bigger. We're getting a lot bigger with the e-bike traffic that has come out, the number of people that are going out and buying e-bikes and going, hey, wait a second, I'm going to get rid of one of my motorized vehicles because we really don't need it. We can get by with one of those vehicles, or maybe we can get by with none of those vehicles because we figured out a way to get ourselves around and, you know, not have to use a motorized vehicle and do it much more efficiently. So Mayor Adams concurred that taking the opportunity to bemoan battery-powered bikes, which the state legalized in 2020, we have an e-bike moped, illegal moped crisis. We need to address this over proliferation of e-bikes and scooters. We don't want to be heavy-handed in enforcement, but we do have to get this e-bike scooter delivery under control because it's not under control now. I will shout out about the scooters because I'll tell you what, the liability on the University of Connecticut campus, right here where we broadcast out of, and pedestrians and scooters, I don't even want to get started with this because I don't want to offend anyone who might be listening locally from the university, but they don't belong on sidewalks, period. Zero zap, none on the sidewalks. That's it. And quite honestly, the bicycles don't really belong there either. They are vehicles. Vehicles belong on the road. So go on the road. You know, your little e-scooter goes 20 miles an hour. They fly on those things. And if they're going to go 20 miles an hour on that, then they're going to be going the campus speed limit or the speed limit in a city. In a lot of big cities, speed limit is 20 to 25 miles per hour. So if you're going that fast anyway, don't do it on the sidewalk. Just a little side rant, because Ron's always ranting about something. So, you know, the city of New York is looking at this as a big crisis. And yeah, it's true that, you know, the data from the Department of Transportation provided 3 years of figures from 2021 to 2023, which showed the portion of cyclists killed on e-bikes dropped actually from 57.9% 2 years ago to 47.4% last year, and then rose to 69.2% this year to date, which is the an analysis that was not previously released to reporters before the Adams administration. So overall, 18 of this year's dead cyclists were e-bike riders compared to 11 in 2022 and 9 in 2021, the city said. But because officials previously did not separate e-bike deaths from general cycling fatalities before 2 years ago, it is impossible to gauge the historical significance of recent trends. Crucially, DOT could not provide the raw number of trips made on e-bikes versus manual bikes, rendering it impossible to determine the true extent of this crisis. Yeah, okay. So, you know, the real problem here is that there, once again, I'll say it a thousand times, there are not safe places for bicycles to ride in major cities like this. And, you know, you've got so many, a lot of these cities are cut on grid. So you've got north and south and east and west, pretty basic, pretty simple. Take out one of those north-south lanes and make it into just bikes, you know, and maybe do it, you know, just take the lane out and use it as bikes. Yeah, I know there's businesses there. There's people that live there. I understand all that. But there are ways of doing this during certain times of the day, maybe, whatever it may be. It's going to be inconvenient for someone, but it's going to really, really cut down your cycling deaths. And, you know, you really should have a strong north-south and a strong east-west corridor for the bicycles. Simple. Simple. This is not rocket science here. This is common sense. So anyway, the vast majority of bike riders were killed by drivers of cars and trucks, and 94% of those fatalities took place on streets without protected bike lanes. Building protected bike lanes keeps everyone safe, bike riders, pedestrians, and drivers. Yet, just 3% of New York City streets have protected bike lanes. Okay, 3% of a city with 8 million people in it. That's pretty sad, folks. Pretty sad. E-bikes have been present on city streets for years, even before they were legalized in 2020. That year coincided with a dramatic increase in cycling across the city during the start of COVID-19. Which is that the before and the after years. So that really muddles the significance of the e-bike stat. It's not a new condition. E-bikes have been with us for a number of years now, said John Orkett, a former city transportation official and longtime bicycle advocate. There's a huge safety program in the bike lanes and the curb lanes of New York City. It's people getting killed on two wheels. Orkut castigated DOT for not doing the work to decipher the acute causes of each crash. For example, when the agency has repeatedly noted that six of this year's bike victims were killed in solo crashes, it has not provided any additional details that would allow for policy response to those crashes. What are the natures of those crashes? We don't know. If they hit a crack or a hole or were going through a light, DOT isn't doing any detailed release to summarize what the crash reports show. So there you go. That's New York City. That's them complaining about the fact that there may be an issue with all these e-bikes on the streets. Ah, terrible, terrible thing. So David Meyer is the person who put this together, and he is with Streets Blog and Do It All New York beat reporter from 2015 to 2019. He returned as a deputy editor in 2023 after a 3-year stint at the New York Post. So a New York guy, a total New York guy. Very, very good. So anyway, shame on you, City Hall. You got called out for ranting in the rant for being silly. And not doing your research, and you know you're going to get called out by bike people like me because it's not us. It's not us. I'm telling you, it's the motorized vehicles that are a bigger threat than anything else. And let me add to that, and this is something that I find in our local streets, and I've been really, really, really paying attention to this lately because there's just a lot of people speeding now that weren't speeding before, maybe. Not sure about that. But there seems to be a high, high level of impatience. And with that high level of impatience comes drivers that are just driving too fast. You know, I drove my car, I apologize, to the community center this morning and to teach my class, and it's in the early wee mornings of the day, so I was on the road by, you know, before 5:30 in the morning, and I'm driving up a major state road to get to my class that I teach. And I'm going the speed limit, which is 45 miles an hour on a state road, which is a state road which has no shoulder on it whatsoever. And it is heavily traveled by lots of people going to and from the University of Connecticut or on their way out to the arteries to get into Hartford or whatever. And I'm going up the road, and I didn't have just one car pass me, but two cars passed me this morning because I was going the speed limit. People just drive too fast. That's all there is to it. And then you add the mix of throwing cyclists, pedestrians in there, and it gets ugly. So enforcement is really a problem here, and it's a problem that needs to get addressed. Speaking of enforcement, academics conclude what we already know. Oh, actually, I didn't want to go to this one yet. I wanted to go to the other one. Let's go here. Oh, yeah. Automated bike lane enforcement laws are taking off, and so is camera tech. So there's new AI-equipped technology that helps cities identify when drivers park in an unprotected lane, and possibly hit them with fines. The thing I found interesting about this is these enforcements of the bike lanes, automatic bike lane enforcement, it's being seen by the buses because the buses have cameras on them. The buses have cameras on them because if there's a violation of cars parked in a bus stop, they get reported. So I found this really, really interesting because it's like, okay, so we have a way to monitor this on a pretty timely basis because buses are on a schedule and they're always on the street. So if we could use bus data to also, and that's what this whole piece of literature was all about here, is that we don't use this data to also report cars that are parked in bike lanes. And, you know, and it's very, very simple. As long as you can see it, you can map it. So we can enforce it at that point. So, hey, there we go. Hey, where's your local municipality with a bus, regular bus service, which has cameras on board that can also monitor the people that are violating the bike lanes? Because there's a number of people who have been hit, okay, by car because there's a car in the bike lane and they have to swerve around the car in the bike lane, come out into the car and truck travel lane, and then swerve back in to be able to get around that vehicle. Now, I have a minor solution to this one also, and it's really actually a major solution to it. But, you know, so you've got this car that is parked in that lane. Obviously, it's going to take you an awfully long time to take a picture of it with the license plate and all, which would be the right way to do it. But, you know, are you going to be that person who's going to be the vigilante who's going to be out there taking pictures of the car in the bike lane? Probably not. What you're going to do is you are also on your way to work, on your way to school, on your way to the post office or to the library or to pick your kids up at school, whatever. It could be anything. And so you don't really have the time to stop and do that sort of thing. But the buses, they can do this sort of thing. And they could report these things. And they are taking pictures of cars and license plates all day long. So this is the obvious answer to and solution to this problem. Now, if you are a cyclist and you are in that lane and you're coming up on the infamous, you know, car that has double parked in the bike lane and they're in the way, the way to get around that is to obviously, you'll be able to see this from a distance. So you need to anticipate right away that you're coming out into the car travel lane, in which case you put your hand out and you indicate to the drivers that are coming up behind you that you are coming out, and you gradually and deliberately move over into that travel lane. When you swerve into that travel lane, you create chaos. And chaos is not the way that we get respect as cyclists on the road. So don't create chaos. You need to merge in just like you would if you were driving a motorized vehicle, which brings me back to the same thing that I've been saying for the last few years. Don't ride your bicycle in traffic. Drive your bicycle in traffic. Ride your bike like you're driving a motorized vehicle, and everything goes a lot smoother. The communication is better with the driver. Everything works better when you do this sort of thing. So, hey, you guys got a bus service in your community? Does that bus service have a camera on it? This is something you should definitely check out, because if they have cameras, they're seeing the violators. If they can see and record the violators, you got it. So automated bike lane enforcement laws are taking off, and so is camera tech. Beautiful thing, isn't it? It's great. Hey, there's certain times when AI is good, right? Okay, let's move to the next thing. The next thing, very, very simple. Academics conclude what we already know. Cyclists are more neighborly than drivers. That was my big DUH on a positive side earlier in the show. Yeah, no kidding. Cyclists are better people than drivers, not only because they get exercise or help the environment, they also have better ethics. This is from a new study, all right? This study is, this article was written by Gersh Kuntzman, and it says, the concept is pretty simple. Are you the authors of this new report, Orientation Towards the Common Good in Cities, just published in the Journal of Environmental Psychology? Drivers looked inside isolated mobility and have little or no... locked inside isolated mobility, have little or no interaction with spatial environment, and that isolation can reinforce individualistic behaviors and cause drivers to neglect collective actions. That's a lot of words. What does it mean? I'm in my box. This is what I do. I do everything in my box. I eat in my box. I drive in the box. I read my cell phone in my box. I send text messages in my box. I listen to all the entertainment in my box, but I'm in a box, and I can't see anything outside of the box. Wow. It's kind of sad, isn't it? So cyclists, meanwhile, are directly connected to the environment around them, and an emotional attachment of people to their neighborhood is considered a mediator for civic activities. As a result, people who move non-motorized experience a greater orientation towards the common good than people who move motorized. Huh. Didn't we talk about Cranksgiving earlier? Yeah. Take care of people. Take care of people because you can, and your bicycle is a great delivery tool for it. It's wonderful. Orientation toward the common good is a fancy way of describing how people feel responsible for others, how people abide by basic rules of society, and how people participate in social and political life and engage in public discourse. And such an orientation is crucial for social cohesion, albeit tricky to obtain, many studies have found, but cyclists orient towards the common good better than drivers. Wow, ride a bike and you're a better person. I'm starting to like this. You know, I'm liking this article. This is great. Study of residents in Germany builds on previous research that showed that an increased walkability and bikeability improved the orientation towards the common good, but it also shows how difficult it is to achieve the common good effect of cycling in a world so oriented around the car, which is just so awful for people's mental and physical health. See also road rage. Even in Europe, car trips are common. 57% of the trips in Germany and 49% of the trips in even in the bike utopia of the Netherlands. In the United States, the car is simply omnipresent, accounting for 80.3% of the trips. Only 6% of Americans walk or bike to work. Sad. 6%. Even in cities where distances are often short and good alternatives are available, private motorized transport is the mode of transport mostly used by the greatest number of people, the study bemoans. The car, therefore, dominates the public space and has become the dominant norm for urban mobility. And the car is basically designed to eliminate contact with the outside world. Wow. This is great. So cars cause isolation. Interesting. And everybody just wants to get in their car and they want to be isolated. They don't even commute together. Rarely will you see an automobile or a truck, which is used as an automobile, whatever, as for transportation, with more than one person in it. I you know, if you want to go out and have some fun one day, just to have some fun one day, when you're out riding your bike, start counting the number of cars that have more than one person in them. Don't bother counting the ones with one person in them because you're going to run out of numbers and you're going to run out of digits on your fingers here to really sort it out. Count the ones that actually have more than one person in them. That's a good little fun test to do when you're out riding your bike the next time. As that car passes you, take a look at it, glance over, see how many people are in the car. If there's just one person in the car, they don't count. If there's more than one person in the car, that's one. All right? That's the way this works. I like this idea. This is good. I'm going to have to try to remember this. Maybe I'll listen to my show and I'll write it down. There you go. To prove that cyclists have less individualistic behavior, the researchers analyzed data on how many interactions residents had with social organizations such as schools, churches, art centers, and other clubs, or how many times they interacted with charitable organizations or political associations, boycotted a product, volunteered, discussed politics, or even wrote a letter to the editor of a newspaper or a website. The study found that the frequency of bike use over time had a small positive and significant effect on social organizational participation and on political participation. In contrast, the frequency of car use did not have such an effect in any of the models, though authors wrote. A similar picture emerged for local helpfulness and neighborhood solidarity. Again, a more frequent use of the bike had a significant positive effect, whereas the use of the car had no significant effect. People in urban environments have greater orientation towards the common good when using bicycles than when using cars. So it says here, it's a bit unclear why. The authors say it might have to do with the basic trust in neighbors in which cyclists are directly interacting, and that higher levels of trust in others increases citizens' willingness to contribute to the common good. People who travel by bike experience the local infrastructure more directly, recognize social grievances, and see people in need of help earlier, they added. The benefits of cycling over driving are more profound and sustainable than previously thought, underscoring the importance of promoting green transportation. And in case you think this study was funded by a bike manufacturer, it wasn't. This research did not receive any significant grant from funding agencies in the public, commercial, or not-for-profit sectors, the authors wrote. There you go. So, hey, bike people are better people. Gee, that makes me feel like I'm up on my pedestal here. You know, we're just a little more in touch. Think about it. When you're out riding your bike, you have to be in touch with everything around you. You have to be very hyper aware of traffic coming and going. Maybe you're on a group ride. Maybe you're in with a bunch of other cyclists. Your awareness is much, much higher, because it has to be, because it's the only way you can cycle safe. So this is, it's just such a big no-brainer, you know, that cyclists would be better people in general, because they're so much more community-oriented. Even our group rides are very community-oriented. You know, we go out on a group ride, it's not just we're going to go out and ride our bikes and get, you know, uber competitive with one another or whatever it is. I try to not subscribe to that. That was the thing I did when I raced my bike and I had a number on my back. That's another story for another time. But it's a real social affair. It's a real cool social affair. Even my spin classes in the morning are a social affair. There's all sorts of things that are brought up. There's lots of conversation as we're warming up, as we're cooling down. There's lots of things that are discussed. It's very, very, very social. And so therefore, when, you know, you go, even when you're going out, like I said, on that group ride, it's probably a pretty social affair. And it tends to not put you in the same frame of mind that you're in when you're buried into your device or driving your device, we'll call it, because, you know, driving the vehicle is sort of a device and actually should require more attention than it gets, because now we have to go to driverless cars because people can't pay attention when they're driving their cars. That's another story for another day, for another episode. And we'll revisit that one in 10 years and see if it ever took off. But so these are to me, this is kind of a no-brainer, but that's what it is. And there you go. Cyclists are more neighborly than drivers. How about that? Who would have guessed? Wow. Boy, I got so many other things that I wanted to talk about here today, but I'm starting to run out of time already. This is crazy. That's okay. This is what we do. And we'll hit some more of these things and talk about them a little bit more in the future. One that I have to bring up, though, before I end, and that is the teaser that was in the rant, GCN Plus. You guys watch GCN? I should have worn the shirt today. I have my GCN shirt sitting over my drawer in the other room. GCN Plus is shuttering its live streaming services and app next month. Yeah, that's it. No more GCN. So, Global Cycling Network. I love these guys. I absolutely love these guys. They're funny. They do really cool stuff. They'll still be there doing that, I'm sure, but the service that they had to bring us all this great bike racing, it's done. So they're closing the network effective December 19th. It's a big blow to cycling fans who grew accustomed to watching the Tour de France and other major races live via the app. And officials confirmed Wednesday that the popular live streaming service and its accompanying app will close next month. Sad, sad, sad day. It says here, we wanted to inform you that GCN Plus subscribers are being contacted today to notify them that the service will be closing on December 19th, a corporate note read Wednesday. The company also shared details in a YouTube video. For live coverage they enjoyed on GCN Plus, customers will be directed to the appropriate platform, such as Discovery Plus, Eurosport, or Eurosport Extra in European territories, and be able to sign up for those services. Hey, shout out. Why, because I'm in the United States, can't I get Eurosport? Okay? Just a shout out. As an app, I don't care. I would love to have Eurosport, but I can't get Eurosport here in the United States because it's blocked by the major networks and the major streaming services. Foul. I call foul on that. That's not good. So officials said subscribers will be refunded portions of their paid fees going forward. So if you have subscribed to the year's service and your service is still going, you will get a refund for whatever you have prepaid for. Global Cycling Network was launched in 2013 by Shift Active Media founder Simon Ware as part of a Google-backed effort to build out YouTube content. In the back of that successful project, coupled with a merger with Discovery Channel, GCN Plus, and its subscription services was unveiled in 2020. Officials said the move is part of a consolidation effort by new corporate owners, Warner Brothers Discovery, which merged in 2022. The decision comes from our parent company, Warner Brothers Discovery, and is driven by its global strategy to consolidate its streaming services and to offer content in fewer places, making it easier for customers to access and discover more content. We'll see. Not sure I'm completely convinced on that. But anyway, we're going to go back to whatever. I wanted to share that with you. You got comments on this? Make a comment. I love to hear some comments on the GCN Plus thing. I think it's a sad day, quite honestly. But anyway, events. The 2023 Cyclocross season is still rocking and rolling here, folks. December 3rd, we had the last of our Connecticut series, and that will be the Governor's Guard Rodeo, is what they call it. And December 5th through the 10th is the National Championships. Here it comes. I did find a video this morning when I was poking around. Apparently, there is a course preview. I will put it up on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. If you wish to log into that, you can check and see, and you can get a course preview. I know some folks that are heading out to Nationals that might find that of interest. Nationals is in Louisville this year, by the way. So I'm going to go to finishing points. The Connecticut Cyclocross Series continues. Are you aware of your space and your surroundings? And are you a GCN Plus member? Hey, New York City, don't complain about e-bikes. Fix it. Cyclists are more neighborly than drivers. Who would have guessed? And we really do love those listener comments, so please keep them coming. Remember, Cyclocross is here. Nationals are coming. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and lack of places to safely ride your bike, and join the revolution of change. Hey, take a day. Park the car or truck. Use your bike instead. You might just surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, the management, or the licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live, on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or on a podcast, and you would like to comment, you can send me an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you want to contribute information to the show, drop me an email. This is Pedal and Ron. Keep the rubber side down, the wind at your back. get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week.